Welcome, dear listener. I'm Christian Corley, and with me on this occasion are James Baldock and Simon Daines.
Hello. Good morning, afternoon, evening. That's appropriate.
It is Thursday, the 6th of September. We're recording this. This podcast should be out later today, in advance of the main event at the weekend, which is myself and James McLean at the VarpCon live. And we are hoping, as well as having a live audience, we're hoping to stream it live on either YouTube or Facebook. I haven't decided yet which one it will be. So that's not this. This is we're talking current.2 news today. So there's a bit of it about, isn't there? There's a lot of discussion about, and there's a lot of some crazy stuff going on. And the title of this week's podcast is When is Doctor Who Series 11 on TV? And we know now, more or less, that it's October the 7th, which is a Sunday. Now, before we come to the day, there's been a bit of a fuss about the date and how it was announced.
Yeah, just a bit.
God, I mean, it makes me wonder whether they still have morons working at BBC Worldwide, which are now BBC Studios, or if they're new morons that they've got in. Or if they do this stuff intentionally just to create a fuss. I can't get my head around which one it is, because they're all equally stupid. So basically what happened is that the date was accidentally leaked on, I think it was the German version of iTunes, and Cultbox picked it up and reported it, and then they got a cease and desist letter from lawyers representing BBC Studios. That's about right, isn't it?
It's news to me, but I'm sure that's that sounds par for the course, yes.
Yeah, that is the situation as I had understood it, and as was actually going to rehearse saying it out loud, but you've done it now, so let's carry on.
Great, okay. So
they seem very keen to reach for lawyers these days.
They do, don't they? Yeah, there was the business with the leak a few weeks ago.
And I wonder if it's a terribly good use of licence fee payers' money to let lawyers trouser it by charging 500 guineas an hour, or whatever they do. However,
a minor infraction.
Yeah.
Or relatively minor infraction.
I mean, it's information copyright. I can see that copyright material like leaking stuff, leaking footage is a copyright infraction, but information surely isn't copyright. It's just tough luck if it gets out when you don't want it to.
I suspect there's some sort of... I've looked at a lot of comments about this all over the place. Yeah. I can't remember where I saw this, but there was a suggestion that it may be something to do with it being commercially sensitive, thereby giving the opposition a chance to schedule something opposite. I don't buy it personally because, you know, they're taking a big risk moving to a Sunday in many ways. And, you know, there's lots of risks about this next series of Doctor Who. I'm not convinced Sunday's a good idea. I think Saturday still needs a lot of work from the BBC. I don't know. We'll see how it turns out with the Sunday, I suppose. I mean, obviously it's in October. James, do you have any unique insights on the leak? Well, sorry, not leak. The leak of the date.
With my journalist hat on, I don't know. I'm in two minds about this. The first thing I'd say is that the BBC have shot themselves in the foot with this, because there have been, as you are both aware, as you dear listener are aware, a number of possible dates doing the rounds over the course of the past few months. For example, the Radio Times reported 23rd of September. Now, we knew that this was the earliest potential date that it could be, for example, and that was made very clear. But of course, there are a number of fans who've taken this as gospel and say, no, it's 23rd of September. No, we don't know when it is. We don't know when it is yet. We know it'll be at some point over September, October. We don't know quite when. So there was a 23rd. There was a 29th. There was the 7th. There was the 13th. All these possible dates going around. And if iTunes had left this one up there and the BBC had done not a thing, it would have been largely ignored. Coldbox would have reported it. We would have said... Everybody on the internet would have said, yeah, well, it's about half possible, but it's not confirmed by the BBC, so, you know, take it with a pinch of salt. Now, the moment there's a cease and desist letter going out, most of the fans put two and two together, and in this case, for once, came up with four, and said, yeah, well, you know, if they've been told to take it down, it's probably accurate, isn't it? it's probably the right date that's been inadvertently leaked by iTunes, and now the cat is out of the bag. And of course, the cat was out of the bag because the BBC hastily scrambled the press release to go out yesterday, confirming what most fans have already figured out. But if, as I say, they didn't have to do that. If they just let it go, then, you know, we would have been none the wiser. And as it stands now, ITV, there are other channels available, have got the up on them in terms of potentially scheduling source material, assuming that's the reason that they wanted it kept quiet. I mean, the Sunday movie is a big move, and I suspect that the BBC would have wanted that to impart that information themselves, and that is a reason to sort of keep it quiet until, you know, the last possible moment. I don't know. But, yeah, so that's one half of it. The second half, my other mind about it, is that Cult Box have been, dare I say, a little bit whiny about this. And said, we're only a small independent site, and we published information, and I quote, in good faith, that we believe was in the public domain, to which I have to say, I'm sorry, that's utter codswallop. The word codswallop would not have been the word I was about to use.
Codwash.
I've got a four-year-old sitting next to me, so I'm kind of tempering language. Mm. But the thing about it is, you know, you're an entertainment site, you know about embargoes, you went into this with your eyes open, and you knew that if this turned out to be a leak, you'd probably get a slap on the wrist for it, but in passing that information over the internet. And every piece they've done since then, which has been saying, you know, we don't think this is very fair, et cetera, et cetera, and blah, 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 legal representation, I think, you know what, man up, accept the slap on the wrist, and deal with it and move on. Maybe just stop talking about it, and then we can except that it is now on a Sunday, and then get on with things. I do echo, though, your thoughts that the BBC's legal representation is possibly being rather heavy-handed about this. And we should also point out that it is third-party legal representation. It's not necessarily BBC Worldwide themselves. It is the people they employ to do it. But there are clearly issues here that they need to be dealt with. And I would also question, as you did, whether this is an acceptable waste of licensed players' money. Deep breath, monologue over.
Well, it's BBC Studios, so it's not necessarily licensed players' money. Could be, you know, money from DVD revenues or sales overseas, etc. So just to clarify that. The other thing as well is, although it's not an exact comparison, it might be helpful if they perhaps Googled the term Streisand effect. Just putting that out there.
Yes.
Okay, I'm just going back to the Sunday thing. Now, the Poke have helpfully compiled a list of comments from Daily Mail readers, in particular, who are unhappy about the Sunday move. Now, there's a slight sneering, mocking about this, which I'm not particularly keen on. People are entitled to their opinions, whether they're good opinions or bad opinions or whatever. So I was taking the piss out of them because they read a particular newspaper. Not something that particularly jives with me, and I'm not a mail reader. More of a Telegraph person myself. However, there are some interesting comments in here. If you were kind of a little bit to the more of a traditionalist when it comes to Doctor Who, and you prefer a man, you prefer Saturdays, you might be reading this and thinking, these people are absolute lunatics. I think, actually, I'll stay away from them and we'll just go with the flow. Coming soon from the BBC, Graham Norton in the remake of Rambo First Blood, Idris Elba in the story of Florence Nightingale, Panorama explores whether Winston Churchill and Oliver Cromwell were actually Winnie Churchill and Olivia Cromwell. may as well move it to 3 a.m. on a Sunday morning in Afghanistan because no one I know is to watch Nurse Who. just hope the programme hasn't been taken over by the PC extremists. And then this one, come on, Yorkie of Huddersfield. It will be a Chinese one next, Dr. Wu. And, you know, that's pretty much where we draw the line here because this is just very silly. And as I say, it is a bit sneery towards people having slightly different opinions and being not entirely, you know, Simon Pegg. Fucking hell, these people don't deserve Doctor Who. I hope they're forced to watch Ghostlight on an internal loop. I'm not sure if that's the Simon Pegg. I don't think it is. Actually, Ghostlight's not so bad, so it's not him, no.
Yeah, I mean, time in the Rani, I think we could probably...
Exactly. Yeah, exactly, exactly. Look, Doctor Who is going to be on a Sunday. It might not fit. On the other hand, it might be absolutely perfect. I've seen a reasonable argument that people are kind of... doesn't fit my world at all. Other people are relaxed on a Sunday evening or watching the TV together. Already, I haven't seen that in a long time on a Sunday. You know, ITV started showing movies on Sunday afternoons. You've got the football on Sky or BT. You've got whatever BBC's got, Country File, Antiques Roadshow, whatever drama. Not really sure what's on early in the evening, presumably Songs of Praise. I don't know. So, you know, I'm going to need some convincing with this. Like a lot of things to do with the new series of Doctor Who. But, yeah, that's where it is. So
Sunday evenings used to be, I don't know if it still is now, because I confess I don't watch a lot of telly on Sunday evenings, because my daughter is constantly binge-watching stuff on Netflix. But Sunday evenings used to be for sort of feel-good dramas, fairly light stuff that shook people up before they went back to work on Monday mornings.
Yeah, I think they've given up with that.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's Call the Midwife is a Sunday evening fare, isn't it?
Yeah, that got grim later on, though, hasn't it?
Exactly. Yeah. So, you know, maybe a bit more, maybe, you know, something that's a little bit more, well, you know, not feel good, like Doctor Who, would fit on Sundays. I don't know. It's worth saying that in the 70s, Wales, and incidentally, have you noticed we've never had a Welsh companion? So much for inclusivity.
Or Doctor. Anyway,
pardon?
Or Doctor.
Or an Ulster Doctor.
Yeah.
Anyway, what was I saying? Yeah, well, in the 70s, Doctor Who was nearly always shown on Sundays in Wales because they had their own Welsh language program in the Doctor Who slot on Saturdays, which I think would have annoyed the Welsh fans no end. And in fact, it is said now that the reason for the loss of the colour print of part one of the Invasion of the Dinosaurs was because they used to have to stick the videotape on a train from London to Cardiff or wherever it was, and somebody lost it, and that's where it. Well, that's what happened to it.
So tapes on a train.
It was taken from a train. Somebody in Wales found it and said, "Don't know what this is. Chuck it out the window."
Oh dear.
It's true. Or it may be true. I don't have any strong views about Sunday. I mean, the Doctor Who's, since Davison's time, has been moved around the schedules. And I'd sooner it was on a regular time slot on Sunday evenings than chucked about the schedules like they did with Capaldi on Saturday. And I think the Saturday schedules for the Beeb is a bit of a mess.
Which is why it needs sorting out. It was a mess in 2005, prior to you coming back. That's what I'm saying. I really think it needs sorting out. And, you know, there's no guarantee it's going to be a fixed time slot on a Sunday either. So we could end up with exactly the same situation, but on a Sunday. I'd also argue that Monday and Tuesday was at least a regular during the Davison's first two series.
Yeah.
If not ideal. During the 80s, Doctor Who was, you know, it was on Mondays, it was on Tuesdays, back to Saturdays, then it was on Wednesdays, and it suffered.
Yeah, but I mean, Trial of the Time Lord was on Saturdays, wasn't it? That had appalling viewing figures.
Yeah, so it was opposite the A-Team, wasn't it? Because the BBC opened the door, didn't they? They let ITV in, as it were, to that slot.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't have any particular.
Well, we don't know, do we? We don't know any more than someone saying that there's going to be a bout of gonorrhea sweeping across the country when we leave the EU. All right, we do know that's not going to happen, but we don't know what's going to happen on Sundays with the schedules on either channel. We just got to see what happens. Basically, so it's the only way.
I'm in two minds about this. You know, does it show that the BBC is full of confidence in the new series of Doctor Who and wants to make sure it gets the best ratings so it puts it into the strongest possible scheduling? Or has it lost confidence in Doctor Who and therefore decided it's moving it away from Saturday nights?
Yeah.
And, you know, whether the show is now on probation, I don't know. I don't know that the next...
Well, what's your inkling? What do you feel? Good feeling.
Absolutely no idea.
Okay.
James? I don't think it's like, Hank, sorry, if I may just finish the point.
Yes.
Mr. Humphreys. I think that the, I don't know what I was going to say. Anyway, over to James.
Sorry, I'm still struggling with the image of Graham Norton as Rambo. I don't know. I mean, I mentioned this to my other half yesterday. She said, well, no, some evenings great. Some evenings we used to watch Narnia back in the 80s.
Yeah, exactly, the 80s.
Yeah, you know, there is this sort of warm, nostalgic family vibe about it, which is clearly what Chibnall has been sort of hinting at over the course of the much wanted publicity after this series. I don't know. I share your cynicism, Simon, about the possibility that Doctor Who may, and we don't know, but may be on probation. I do know, sources tell me that there were grumblings in the BBC about falling ratings. However much you spin it, the fact is Doctor Who is not as popular as it once was in this country in terms of the terrestrial viewing public. Now, you can dress that up with iPlayer ratings all you want, but I think sooner or later, we're going to have to accept that that's where we are.
Yeah.
It is not as popular as it was when the David Tennant was doing it. That's for better or worse. But perhaps there is this feeling that, you know, we're going to relegate it. So relegate it, he says with air quotes, to a Sunday evening slot in order to see how it does there, because we might as well try something and it's not working on Saturday evening. I genuinely don't know. That's for people with more knowledge of the ins and outs of the BBC than my meagre self.
I don't think Chibnall's got anything to do with it, though. He has control over the scheduling at all, and I know you're not saying he does. Something I wonder about is, I mean, you know, is it on probation? It would seem odd to end Doctor Who on a Christmas special, which would presumably be open to a next series after that. So, you know, I don't think we're in the days like the 1980s when once they brought Doctor Who back after its first cancellation. And it was clearly very much on probation for its final 4 years.
Yeah.
I don't think we're in that sort of territory. Well, but I wonder, I think something also I wonder is, you know, we've had an awful lot, and obviously people like us have thrown in our halfpenny worth on the debates, but there's been an awful lot of stuff from the Doctor Who fans about the casting of a female Doctor. And I wonder what the general viewers' view of this, you know, whether people who quite like Doctor Who and watch it, what usually watch it, will think that it's daft casting a woman as a Doctor and it's all the PC brigade and I'm not going to bother to watch it because it'll be silly. You know, or whether they think, as the sort of Guardian leadership does, this is, you know, a huge victory for social justice and we must all get behind it. You know, I just wonder if for the casual viewer, the woman doctor thing is going to be accepted or rejected. I honestly don't know.
Do you know what? I don't think they care. I just think they want some fun. And having watched the Tennant episode recently, during the school holidays with the boy, and actually surprisingly with my daughter, who his twin sister, who's repeatedly claimed over the years the Doctor Who scares her. She sat there and watched all of series one and series two.
Yeah.
There's, you know, as much as I like Peter Capaldi, I would much rather have you know, the fun, the excitement and the pace of the Tennant era now. Over the past 3 or 4 years, but certainly that's what the new series needs. And if it isn't delivering that, I don't think it will matter who the Doctor is.
Yes.
I'm with you on that, Christian. I think there is a compelling argument for Doctor Who having lost some of its sense of fun. And I think part of that stems from, I think it's the Phantom, I call it the Phantom Menace argument. Because the way I understand it is that when they were filming The Phantom Menace, everybody was very reverential about it. And there was a lot of talk about, oh, it's Star Wars, and we must take this very seriously because it's great, it's very important, you know. Whereas when they were making the original Star Wars in Tunisia, well, you know the stories about the fact that nobody really enjoyed it very much, and everybody thought it was just going to be a silly sci-fi film that tanked.
Yeah.
the one person who behaved with absolute professionalism throughout the whole shoot was Ali Guinness. And Anthony Daniels as well, apparently. But Ali Guinness was a role model. He knew it was rubbish, but he turned up and did it, and did it the very best of his ability.
Yeah.
But by the time the prequels rolled around, there was this huge millstone of legacy. 20 years of they've built up. Doctor Who has become like that in the last few years of its run in particular, I think, because there is a sense of adhering very much to the respect and traditions of the past, and this huge 55-year-old show that's very important. It's fun evening television, and it's not something that should be taken, I feel, personally, as seriously as it is by the people who watch it, and certainly by the people who make it. You get this sense of important TV that makes a point that's very sort of grand and overblown, and, you know, it's a flagship show. I don't know. The thing about Tennant is that, you know, he was very popular, but I think they were just setting out to make fun TV then. And
yes.
I think that has been lost.
Yeah.
Whether that's going to come back, I don't know.
And is a female Doctor going to be as popular with the ladies as David Tennant? I'm going to say no.
Yeah. I mean, it depends who's watching. You said the casual fan, you thought about casual fans. I suspect it's going to be a mixture of both repugnance and casual acceptance.
Yeah.
Some people will like it, some people will not. But you see, the casual fan base are where the BBC need to be aiming right now. Because
yeah, absolutely.
And maybe they've tried everything else. They might as well try this.
Well, I'm not sure they have tried everything else, but I'm going to jump onto Facebook because we threw this open to the Facebook readers. Nigel Webb, I can't talk about it down the pub as I go out on Saturday night.
Uh-huh.
Stephen Wazogrodsky, I apologise if I got that wrong, says there's no chance of missing it because of work. Sunday is great for it, so works for him. Jeff Waddle, if, as rumoured, it's 5:30, that's too early for me to watch live, but Sunday would be fine as long as it's not moved about. I'd have thought 7 or something would be better, though. Now, that chimes in with something someone else said about the football. Clash with the football, says Andrew Wilberforce Moose Fairbrass. That's that done. Now, football is usually peaks about 1.2 million, and that's for big games. So I don't think Premiership football is a major hit for Doctor Who. And also, of course, football is kind of regional, so fans from London and Manchester will probably tune into a game between Manchester United and Manchester City. See what I did there? Gary Akers has provided me with a nice segue. I really hope you guys talk about the story in the Express about a rumoured Series 12 plot direction. If this came true, that would be the last straw that makes me quit the show, and I'm a lifelong fan. To which he refers... plans to introduce a past alien relationship for the Doctor. Now, there's two things we need to underline here before I continue. As we speak, certainly up to a few weeks ago, and certainly publicly, there is no Series 12. Nothing's been commissioned. There's no Doctor Who next year. Possibly a special, but there isn't time to do a series next year, as I understand it. The Express, says Cult Box, has cited an anonymous source of BBC America who spoke of possible love interests for the 13th Doctor. The source mentioned a possible future storyline. The suggestion of this Time Lord fancying anyone is off the table, although there are early plans to introduce an alien who may have enjoyed a relationship with her that is, of course, complicated. The Beeb's top brass are keen to steer away from having any sexual undertones, and the show team are very keen to keep the element of overt sexuality out of this first series. I mean, this could be bollocks. Hogwash, of course. But, I don't know. That doesn't strike me as a show that's running around having a lot of fun. That strikes me as a Time Lord running around having a lot of fun while the companions are tucked up in bed. I don't know, that's there. Any comments?
It sounds pretty unlikely, but then I suppose so does the would the idea have sounded unlikely that the Doctor would meet an old girlfriend and eventually marry her. and that worked. So, you know, it, I suppose it depends how it it's handled. I expect it's nonsense.
As worded, it certainly sounds like hogwash.
It
may yet come to be true, of course. I mean, this is the thing about tabloid rumours. Occasionally, you get one that turns out to be true. The rumour that Doctor Who was going to be aired on a Sunday has been going around for months and months and months, and first emerged in a tabloid and was disputed by a great many people. But of course, it turned out to be the truth.
But some of these things surely start from, you know, it's an intelligent guess that they'll shift it to a Sunday. Perhaps it's a less intelligent guess that there'll be love interest for the 13th Doctor. I mean, there was love interest for the 10th and 11th Doctors.
I also think that the powers that be do occasionally read these reports and think, oh, that's completely made up, but it's good, we can use it. I mean, I think that's what Moffat did with Sherlock, isn't it? He read all the fan theories for how Sherlock survived the fall off the roof, and then wrote one of them into the show. Presumably because he didn't know how to answer the question himself, but it's not going there right now.
Okay. Now we also know something else about the new the first episode of the new series.
Mm-hmm.
We know when it's on, October 7th. We think it's early evening. It probably won't finish later than 8 o'clock. It'll probably start 6, 7 o'clock. And it's called The Woman Who Fell to Earth. Now, this show that has been described repeatedly by its new creator, showrunner, and the star, that it wouldn't be overtly pointing to the Doctor's gender. Calling the episode The Woman Who Fell to Earth would seem to contradict that slightly. I mean, why didn't they just call it Mrs. Who Lands?
Because there wasn't a David Bowie film called Mr. Who Lands.
Yeah, it is rather on the nose, though, isn't it? It's a bit, it frustrates me that there's this habit, and I think it's come from American TV, to give episodes really sort of smart, knowing meta names, which really irritates the shit out of me. Why not just make it, give it a proper title? I'm currently reading a novel. Which is quite, and I've misplaced it. Hold on a moment. Bear with me, dear listener. There it is. Caroline Graham, Death in Disguise. That's a title. That's a Midsummer Murders, by the way.
Okay.
That is a title. The Woman Who Fell to Earth just reeks of trying to be smart. And, you know, I think, you know, postmodernism's been around a while now. It's maybe time just to sort of, like, go a bit subtle again.
Well, we can confirm, actually, that some of the other episode titles that are now up for grabs include... The Girl Who Sold the World, Girls Keep Swinging, Be My Husband.
Girl, I'm Only Dancing.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you know, I mean, the special. Oh, All the Young Dudettes, that was another one.
Hello, Space Girl.
Yeah, absolutely.
I see we're calling the Doctor a girl now, not a woman.
Sorry, yes, yeah. Yeah. I think it depends. I mean, some of his songs have men. Bowie wrote a lot of songs with boys or girls in it, so we kind of have to do the equivalent. But yes,
I suppose they're just going for what they consider to be a wow title for the first episode.
Is it a wow title?
Oh, it's okay. It's
exactly.
It's not that bad. It really isn't.
I mean,
you could go with the sort of Blake 7 style titles of just a single word, where you had thing. Was the title, or Blob, Aurak.
Yeah, go for that. That works. That's a good method of titling, because it makes the writer focus on exactly what the title is going to be, and that can inform the actual storytelling. But it's good, because it doesn't give too much away. It could be, you know, Doctor Who's done that a couple of times. Blink. Hi. Yeah. Great episodes that work, that don't give too much away from the story, from the title. This... Not only does it give too much away, it also can manage or mismanage expectations about the episode. And if you're mismanaging expectations about the episode, you risk losing the viewer if you're mismanaging those expectations. If the surprise or the twist doesn't work correctly, then that is a real risk, I feel.
But surely The Woman Who Fell to Earth as a title just implies that there is a woman and the planet Earth, and she appears on it. It doesn't say much, does it? I mean, I know we sort of fall out of the top, so whether she will actually physically fall out of the sky and land in a haystack or something.
It just feels a bit Moffat-y to me. I think that's my problem. Yeah. And, you know, as far as we're aware, he's not involved, so, you know.
But don't you normally write the thing and then decide on what the title is? You don't start with the title on a
black sheet. I think it can work either way, really.
But most of the early Doctor Who's, I mean, the classic Who's had a proper Doctor Who. Sorry, I didn't say that. Most classic Who's had working titles before they, you know, before they went with whatever whatever they ended up being called, didn't they?
Yeah, I remember. It's funny. I always think Planet of the Daleks. This is a particular point of mine. Planet of the Daleks would have worked better with a different title.
Yes.
Because it has a wonderful episode one cliffhanger when Pertwee is sitting in the middle of the jungle, spraying, spraying some, undoing some invisible spray. I think it's been a while since I've seen it, and you know, it reveals the familiar, unmistakable shape of a Dalek shell, and you just sort of zoom in on him and says, "Daleks." And I thought, yeah, you kind of shot yourself in the foot there, didn't you? A bit. You know?
Same with Day of the Daleks, really, as well.
Sorry.
Same with Day of the Daleks. A slight tweak in title and some smarter editing throughout the episode, and that could have been a massive surprise.
Yeah, well,
but they wanted to hurt the viewers, though, didn't they?
Exactly, yeah.
Frontier in Space is a wonderful surprise at the end.
What did you say?
Frontier in Space. Frontier in Space has a brilliant cliffhanger.
But yeah.
The Master has brought the Daleks, but you have no idea. Same with Earthshock. Years later, that is clearly what they were trying to emulate, and it worked.
Yeah.
But, as you say, they were pretty generic back in the day, weren't they?
Can I just point out that Planet of the Daleks was the first story I saw in colour?
Oh, wow.
Because I'm an oldie, and I saw it when it was first broadcast. And I remember being very cross that the Daleks were such boring colours, having waited to see them in colour for so long, and they were gunmetal grey.
What did you expect to be?
At the end.
What did you expect them to be?
I don't know. I don't know. More multicoloured, I think.
Like the comics?
No idea. Yeah. Pink or something. With blue dots. Yes. Anyway, Betcha the Daleks will be in the Christmas episode.
Well, this is the thing. Everybody's saying, oh, there's no Daleks this time around. But there has not been an outright denial anybody. What we have been told is that there will be lots of new monsters, not all, lots of, and that when they were asked about the Daleks, Chibnall's answer was, well, we've got 2 weeks left to film and we haven't seen them yet, which is as you're going to get, that they're going to show up at some point.
Exactly. It's deliberately ambiguous, isn't it? Yeah. He didn't say there are no Daleks in this season.
Nobody has said there are no Daleks.
I think it's pretty established, too, that the Doctor isn't really the Doctor until he or she has met the Daleks.
Well, that's debatable, because that would mean that Pertwee wasn't the Doctor for a long time.
Well, exactly.
And Series 7, Season 7, beg your pardon, is one of my absolute all-time favourites.
Yeah, I'd go along with that.
So, yes, there was something I was grasping towards there, and then you started talking about Daleks, and it's gone somewhat.
You're talking about
Oh, no, I'll tell you what it was. This is something I've discussed with James McLean on the podcast before, and it goes back to what Mr. Baldock was saying earlier about them having tried everything else. Something that they haven't tried, which is a key element of classic Doctor Who, is particularly the sort of Hinchcliffe era. Everyone thinks the Hinchcliffe era is all about the darkness and, you know, gothic and horror and stuff like that. But one of the things that it does, which Doctor Who is very rarely done, I'm thinking possibly Age of Steel, maybe one or two other episodes, and that is all since 2005, is focus on the villain.
Yes.
The overwhelming focus of Doctor Who stories since 2005 has been on the Doctor or the Doctor's companion.
Mm.
Very little of it has focused on the villain. And as a result, we don't get Solons or Morbius or You know, those big, bad, nasty guys. Those, you know, those proper classic Doctor Who villains. All those villains working for towards a particular purpose because they've been possessed by the actual villain or whatever. We're not getting them.
And I wonder if that's a function of what I would think of as the overplay of humour in Doctor Who. Because, you know, when you're dealing with the sort of Stalins and Pol Pots of the Doctor Who universe, having that sitting next to Moffat-y smart-ass quips all the way through, I don't know, it doesn't seem a sort of appropriate juxtaposition. So, you know, and from the 90 seconds we've seen so far of Jodie Whittaker's Doctor, it doesn't look as though it's going to be a return to the more serious style of storytelling. And in fact, I've just been rewatching series one, i.e. series one from 1963-4. There ain't a laugh in it. You know, there's one rather weak crack that the Doctor makes in the last part of the Daleks, and that's about it. You know, it is actually done as a drama series rather than as a sort of semi-serious runaround that has no sort of emotional reality, as you got with some of the Capaldis. So I wonder if that's the reason why the baddies are not quite as unpleasant as they used to be. It's not feel-goody enough.
Yeah. James?
Yeah, I'd agree. I do think, to completely not disagree with anything you've said, Simon, because I'm with you on that, the Doctor Falls was one of the that, but as much as I didn't like the Doctor, that is no great. The scenes between Master and Missy, I do think, were among the best Series 10 had to offer.
Yeah.
I loved the way they were together. I loved the way that they interacted. And I thought that was, despite the fact that they do overplay the humour. I thought the farewell scene between them, when they went their separate ways, having killed each other, was beautifully written. I liked it a lot. But yeah, there is no one like Harrison Chase these days.
Yes.
Harrison Chase was a wonderful, wonderful character who had a lot of screen time and a lot of, and yeah, there is a certain, the problem that you get, unfortunately, and I think one reason perhaps they don't do it, alongside the humour, but also when you have a classic supervillain, a lot of the time is spent monologuing. And Harrison Chase, because I love him, does do a lot of monologuing. And perhaps we are a little bit wiser to that now, and it is that's something that's laughed at and looked down upon, to the extent that they tend to sort of, well, let's keep the villain off stage for as much as we can. Unfortunately, the opposite end of that is a villain who is completely underdeveloped.
Yeah.
And hence not interesting at all. Like Captain Voyager the Damned, for example.
Yes.
I like very much. It's one of my favourite Christmas specials. It's one of my favourite New Who episodes, just because it is so infernally silly. And the threat in Voyager of the Damned is largely, you know, the impending collapse of the Titanic. However, they then bring in a villain for a single scene who does very little except push Kylie Minogue off a shaft, which is something that many of us have wanted to do for years. But
it
doesn't really explore anything. Yeah, I don't know.
He was very good as well. The guy who played Max Capricorn was very good. And it was very well done, but I know what you mean. Maybe over concentrating on the villain stops it, you know, makes it too dark. I don't know. And they want it to be feel good, and they want characters to have sassy, witty lines and to recover from emotional trauma in the next scene so that they can deliver more sassy.
Well, you know, that's the Buffy model, isn't it? And, you know, it's 20 years old now. Why are we pushing forward with our own model?
You know,
it's becoming a bit tired. And I personally feel that it's come full circle. I think we need to go back towards proper insane, mad villains played by superb actors. As I said, Doctor Who has done it a handful of times. Gambon in the Christmas Carol, that was good. John Sim as the Master in the 2-part series finale. Proper good evil scenes. You'll notice that Missy hasn't had a scene on her own. without the Doctor or the companion with her, apart from that small part in Series 10, that place where the Doctor put her in the thing. That was really the only thing that she'd done on her own without the Doctor or without the companion. So, you know, she hasn't gone around with big plans. She's just dipped her toe in and made a few jokes.
I would argue that the new Who versions of the Master, more so with Missy than with John Sim, really a very sort of pale, I mean, you know, on the theme of the villainy of the proper villains in classic Who, you know, that John Sim and Michelle Gomez's versions of the Master were very, very pale imitations of the originals. And I'm excluding Anthony Ainley here, but, you know, if you think of Delgado and Pratt and Beavers, they were much, much nastier characters.
Yeah.
Much more vicious, much more sadistic. I mean, they were well, Pratt's Master wasn't charming, but they were charming. But at the bottom of it, you know, the Master was a sadist and was spiteful and was, you know, just a very, very nasty piece of work. And I think with Missy, they overplayed that. You know, I mean, if you take a line from The Deadly Assassin, like, you do not understand, I won't do the impersonation, but, you know, when he says, "You do not understand hatred as I do, only hate keeps me alive." You know, there is no way that Missy would come out with a line like that. And I think it sort of shows perhaps the way that the villains perhaps have become lightweight. I'd have to think about that a bit more. But I think the monks in the last series were pretty unpleasant. I think they were well done.
Yes. While you've been talking, Simon, I've been listening, but I've also been scrolling through a list of new episodes to find a convincing villain that I remember liking and thinking was well-developed. And I'll be absolutely honest, I'm struggling. Normally in Doctor Who, most memorable episodes seem to be threat-based with a sort of a token villain behind it rather than anything else.
Yes.
What about, I mean, Davros? Davros in Series 9, the which is familiar, and I don't remember them being particularly enjoyable stories, but I did like the way they explored the relationship between the Doctor and Davros in this sort of latter stage of his life. When you think it's going one way, and of course we know it probably isn't going that way at all, then it isn't. I think that was one of the few times they seemed to get it right.
But it's significant, isn't it, that when they did that, they were using a character from the classic Who and not a new character.
Yeah, exactly.
I can't think of a comparable villain from New Who to Classic Who.
No, there is no Solon, which is a shame, really.
No, but I mean, look what happened to the Sontarans. You know, I like what they did with Strax and so on. I thought it was funny. And I thought that Dan Starkey was very, very good. But, you know, then go back to the Time Warrior and you've got Lynx is a thug and a baddie. And a very, very nasty piece of work. And they become much more lightweight in the new series. I think they did the same thing with the Zygons and the Ice Warriors. And, you know, the Zygons become pretty sympathetic in the new series. And they're, in the classic series, they were totally unsympathetic people. Blobs.
There is an argument to be made that the Sontarans only ever had one decent story.
Yeah.
In the classic one.
The Two Doctors!
No. Don't like it. Sorry. Don't like it at all.
That was a joke.
Oh, okay. I always thought I was in a minority when I said that.
But you quite often get with the classic villains that they're done best in their first story, e.g. the Ice Warriors, as well as the Sontarans. They're less good in the rematches.
Yeah. Yes. I wouldn't argue with that.
You could even say that of the Daleks as well, actually. They work best in the first story.
Yeah, but Dalek Invasion of Earth, it's a classic. It really is. It's a, you know.
Yeah, the best bits of Dalek Invasion of Earth, though, are the bits without the Daleks in.
Okay, no, you're right. Perhaps. Okay,
Anyway.
I was going to say Genesis, and I can't, because, as you say, the best bits of that don't involve the Daleks. There's got to be other. There must be. There must be other great Dalek stories with lots of Daleks that are good. Mustn't there?
There are, but they're not in the classic series.
Remembrance.
Mm, They're still done in remembrance.
Yeah. Sorry?
Yeah. I'm a fan of remembrance myself, but I was edging towards Parting of the Ways. Lots of Daleks, good story. But anyway, we're running out of time, so there's a few things we need to highlight. And first of all, you're too late for tickets if you want to go to HawkCon this weekend on Sunday the 9th. James McLean and myself will be on the Pertwee stage, location for which you will find when you get there, if you are going, at 11 o'clock for an hour doing a live podcast, which is thrillingly scary, I can tell you. I'm absolutely petrified. Among the guests on the day at the event, not necessarily on the live podcast, Peter Davison and Paul McGann and Katie Manning and Sophie Aldred and Nicola Bryant. And obviously all these things are subject to commitment, but pretty confident most of these will be there on the day. Lots of other things going on as well. Last week's podcast with myself, James McLean and Gareth Cavana will give you the... give you a better idea of who's going to be there and what to look out for. Obviously, the podcasts is something to look out for. And incidentally, we've just changed the name of the podcast. So we are now called... Let me just remind myself, because I forgot.
Podcast that fell to earth.
Oh, dear.
Yes, we are Casterbrus, Doctor Who podcast with a K.
Okay.
We have reverted to having a particular word in the title. That is, that's that. Now, the other thing is that, and the important thing, really, is that we are now on Patreon as well, which means that you can spend from $1 to... $25 to support the podcast with a K and our other podcasts. Now, there are, I'm going to do a proper podcast with James McLean about this. We're going to talk about it in depth. But just to give you a quick idea, if you're paying $1 or more, you get a shout out. If you're $2 or more, you get a copy of Ultimate Regeneration. $3 or more, you get the monthly newsletter, which I'll be writing next week. $5 or more, you get the podcast before anyone else. $10 or more, you are an Ultimate Listener, and you get a print version of Ultimate Regeneration. All of these are cumulative, so you get the things before them. $15, you get access to Patreon-only podcasts. And $25, you actually get to be on the podcast. Now, and we're basically make that podcast about you. Now, the thing about this that I wanted to highlight was the Patreon-only podcasts. We are going to be recording a lot of material at VorpCon on Sunday, and the majority of that you will get to hear clips of on the main podcast, but the majority of it is going to be Patreon only. So if you're able to subscribe and support us, then you will get the benefit of listening to those podcasts, dear listener. I should also, since we have got three patrons already, which I'm very pleased to say, so I need to give a shout out to Jonathan Appleton, to Tariq Latif, and to some woman called Kerry Corley. That's my wife. That's the shout out. The first month you subscribe, you get a shout out and any message that you want us to read out as well. So Kerry's message is obviously "I love you forever and ever." She didn't write that though. So that's that. We are at the end of time. This week's podcast with a K. That is the best part of 50 minutes of Doctor Who chat. Better than any you'll find elsewhere today whilst listening to this podcast. If you're around in Manchester on Sunday, hopefully I'll get to see you, or you'll get to see me. Probably it's better if I see you. See how that goes. And VorpCon Sunday. Very excited to be part of that. Jones McLean will be joining me for that, and hopefully Gareth, who is involved with the organisation of that convention, will be able to pop in. Sadly, Simon Daines and James Baldock won't be attending.
You never know, though.
Ooh.
We may sort of mysteriously pop in wearing a Star Trek mask, and you won't.
I should add as well, before we go, that the format for the show on Sunday has been described as a sort of Noel's house party, with guests popping in. Maybe Noel's Who's party is a better title.
Mr. Blobby, are they?
We're not having Mr. Blobby. We might have Dimensions in Time, you never know. But definitely no Mr. Blobby or Sammy the Shammy, sadly. Or a Gotcha Oscar, we won't be doing that either. Anyway, yeah, that brings us to the end of this week's Casterbrus Doctor Who podcast with a K. Until next time, it's goodbye from us.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
This is a Beyond Casterbrus podcast. Available on iTunes, Audio Boom, Stitcher.com, Player FM, and BeyondCasterbrus.com.